Welcome, and thanks for listening to the Missouri Review Sound Booth Podcast. We're broadcasting from the University of Missouri campus in Columbia, Missouri, home of the Missouri Review, the quarterly that brings you the best contemporary literature in fiction, nonfiction, and poetry. Every week, we'll be featuring a wide range of readings and interviews with writers, editors, and agents. Today on the podcast, we are proud to feature our runner-up in the prose category of the 2014 audio contest, the radio essay Ugly Pew by Joshua Wheeler. Joshua is a writer from New Mexico. His most recent dispatches were for Harper's about a video game graveyard and for BuzzFeed about Spaceport America. Without further ado, please enjoy Ugly Pew by Joshua Wheeler.
Some areas were so worn that even the wood of the pew in those spots was worried away. A thousand hands anxious at the fabric of the cushion, the hands of anyone who's ever needed to sit down right there in the foyer of the Cuba Avenue Church of Christ. The dirty hands of ranchers tardy from chores and soft hands of mothers with fussy babies and the chubby, grabby hands of those babies and their teething on the edge of the bench and the strong, cold hands of pallbearers and damp hands of brides and grooms and antsy teens with drug-tick fingers and bankers whispering on cell phones knocking on wood and the bony hands of very old parishioners whose oxygen tanks are heavy despite the nothingness inside. Banged against the pew as they hobble around, trying to pet the babies. And all the hot hands of sinners and sinners and sinners. The erosion of any waiting room bench. The abuse of a high traffic area. Nicks and rips and stains and cuts and missing chunks and splinters. I kept a collection of chewed double bubble under that ugly pew in the foyer until I was 15. I don't guess it was about vandalism. I wanted to belong somewhere. And the ugly pew on the outside of the worship hall was where I felt comfortable making my mark. When babies crawled under there, I knew they were cooing at a whole roofscape of bright pink stalactites I'd formed in my mouth. At what age do we lose the ability to see magic and waste? I could chew and store three or four double bubbles before somebody found me loitering in the foyer and yanked me back in for the sermon. The worship hall pews were all in nearly perfect condition. The pine still with its dark finish and fabric of the cushion still bright red and woven tight. Any single one of those pews saw only a fraction of the traffic handled by the foyer pew. And in the worship hall, people were generally well-behaved. They quietly and more or less motionlessly endured the steep backs and the thin cushions that provided just enough comfort to encourage getting lost in the sermon, but never so much that you could fully drift to snores. The backs were at such a steep angle that a sleepy head had no choice but to bob conspicuously. The pew demanded a posture meant to maximize the potential for somber transcendence. Back straight and shoulders back and chins raised slightly toward the heavens and everybody more or less entirely motionless. One evening, the minister in his closing prayer announced that my older sister was, at that very moment, in the hospital battling for her life, that we must pray to God to ask God to be with my mother and me and even Dad, who had not been to church in a decade. Ask God to deliver my sister from death's grip and to comfort my whole family in our great time of desperation. Now, I've been known to peek during prayers. I had one eye open for most of that one, scanning for other peekers. Mom and I had been at the hospital all day, and the only reason we'd left at all was so she could get those prayers. I wanted them to count, but also I wanted somebody to see me stand up and rush out during the prayer, which I was about to do because I suspected, eyes closed or not, that prayers amount to very little. But all heads stayed low and all eyes stayed closed, and my defiant exit went unnoticed. And I got mad. I mean, if it ever ended up that prayers do work, but my sister didn't quite make it, I'd be the only one to blame. Out in the foyer, Mom gritted through the post-prayer inquisition, explained the scenario again and again, moving her hands the same way with each telling and pausing to muster smiles of hope, but her cheeks didn't have the strength to rise and her eyes were dark from sobbing. Everything came out as a grimace. She got very sick last night and we almost lost her, but she's battling back now. Yes, she's battling. It's just a sudden sickness, just vomiting in the night. The night before, I'd heard rummaging in the kitchen, midnight fidgeting and pacing that intensified to rummaging. My bedroom was next to the kitchen, and the kitchen was where Mom kept her pills, and it was long past bedtime when I heard rummaging in the cabinet, through bottles of pills like a chorus of baby rattles. At what age does rattling become so terrifying? I was 15. I didn't get out of bed because it was not unusual for Mom to be very ill and groping around in the night, so I kept under the covers and fell asleep and slept through the vomiting and the wailing and the rushing to the emergency room, and only knew in the morning that it had been my sister in the kitchen. Mom said again and again to the people gathered in the foyer of the church that her daughter got suddenly sick in the night, even though she knew by then that her daughter had swallowed every last one of the Vicodin. And the doctors knew, they were still trying to pump out the poison. And I guess I knew before anybody else, the rattles. And Dad had been carrying around the empty pill bottle since he found it when Mom got frantic over all the sudden vomiting. And even then, Dad was already tracking down my sister's boyfriend to find out just what awful thing he might have done to her. And even then, my younger sister was making labels for the pills to keep mistakes from happening. And even then, the church counselor was arranging for an exorcism. And even then, my drunk uncle was showing up at the jail, hollering that a teacher just collared for raping a student must have raped my sister too. Nobody will believe that sometimes people just get the urge to die. Even people you love. Even people who love you. My mother stood in the foyer of the church, exhausting herself, dancing around the word suicide. I pulled her from the crowd. I was mad. I suspected prayers amount to very little. Your daughter wanted to die, I said to my mom. She tried to commit suicide. I braced for tears. I braced to catch her if she fainted, or absorb the blows if she got to punching, or say it again if she did nothing and tried to slip back into grimacing through the bullshit dance. She steadied herself with a hand on my shoulder, and then we sank into the ugly pew, sitting very close to each other and staring, examining one another in a way we hadn't much done since I was a toddler. My daughter wanted to die. She said it quietly and took a deep breath. Her whole chest expanded and she held it. Looked not bigger, but lighter with that breath in her, like she'd been clasped under the arms and was beginning to ascend. her chest rising like that. A deep breath to escape. But she stopped short of floating off. The air soaked to the thirsty roots of her lungs, and she got planted again in this savage world. We held hands and leaned back and settled into the threadbare itch and the splinters, the stains and nicks, gunk from sinners and sinners and sinners. My whole collection of double bubble hardened beneath us. We got comfortable on that ugly pew and stared into the worship hall. Its rows and rows of pews, perfect and empty.
You've been listening to the Missouri Review Sound Booth Podcast, music by Mark Catalano. Check us out online at MissouriReview.com, where you can subscribe to the magazine and enter our annual Jeffrey E. Smith Editor's Prize Contest, with $5,000 prizes in poetry, fiction, and creative nonfiction. Thanks for listening, and check back next week for a new episode of the Missouri Review Sound Booth Podcast.